Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy, or should I say Jim Acosta, our very own Jim Acosta, as it pertains to the governor of the state of Illinois, one Governor Spaulding, Amy Jacobson rabble-rousing yesterday at the press conference and spreading misinformation and disrupting the governor's propaganda session.
Yeah, I mean, all I asked him was, I'm going to set the stage for you, and hopefully we'll get the video for you here. The audio outside of the Thompson Center, CPS parents from a group called Raise Your Hand were protesting, scared. They want remote learning for everybody. And a parent was crying. She's like, my kid. I mean, it's the most outrageous soundbite.
The Raise Your Hand Coalition is a bunch of left-wing teachers union apologists.
Right, okay.
That's
and so they got the parents who actually have kids in CPS get out there and stage this protest. And basically one woman was out of her mind crying. All right, thinking that if she sends her daughter to school on Monday, her daughter's going to die. So I said to the governor, you know, why don't you be a leader here and let those people know that this is a low-risk group and that they're going to be okay if they go to school, and this is what happened.
You know, protests out here this morning, and parents were crying, screaming like, oh, my God, my, you know, as governor, you should try and calm people's nerves maybe, or can you, because they're a low-risk group, students.
Amy, as a supposed reporter, you should probably stop the misinformation. We are done here. Thank you.
Thank you.
You know how you prevent schools from being closed? You stop complaining about mask wearing.
Okay, Jordan. Send me some studies.
Yeah, I want to know the studies.
I'm going to take the podium again and just respond to that. Let me just say this. You are spreading misinformation. I wish you would stop spreading misinformation. You come in here with a political agenda and you spread misinformation, and I just think you should stop. We now need to protect our children. We need to protect the people in our communities, parents, grandparents, teachers. You are working against that. And it is extremely upsetting for all of us who are trying to keep the rest of the state safe.
Killing children. I'm not trying to keep the city safe, the state safe.
Please don't interrupt Governor Spaulding when he's trying to save lives. He's very upset about that. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro answer line. 64636DA, turnkey.pro text line. Please join the governor in chastising Amy Jacobson for making COVID political.
It's so ridiculous, too. It's just textbook, you know, people on social media. Oh, Dan, do you know that I went swimming in Plainfield?
Yes. I had heard something about that.
Yes, because they always resort. That's what the Democratic, that's their playbook. They resort back to that.
What does that have to do with COVID?
It's nothing to do with COVID.
So they don't have anything to say on COVID. So they, you know, go after something that's irrelevant because that's what they do. So and by the way, so follow up question, if I may, on behalf of Amy Jacobson, who's been kicked out of the press conference or caused it to end. Well, you didn't cause it to end, but they ended.
They ended it, because they don't like questions that are confrontational. It wasn't even confrontational. It was the fact that a woman, that people were crying because they have to send their kids back to school and they're demanding remote learning.
It's pretty interesting. So the question was, should you try to calm people down rather than have them be afraid for their children's lives, overreact? And so the answer is, we shouldn't try to calm people down. We shouldn't try to assuage people's irrational fears. We should foment hysteria. That's the governor's position?
Yeah.
Seems to be.
I think it is. I mean, really, they're just promoting fear. And then what happened last night? At about 10 o'clock last night, we've learned that today he's having a press conference. He's going to mask up the whole state now.
Mm-hmm.
Indoor mask mandate for the entire state of Illinois, even in counties that have really low case numbers.
And
so that's everywhere, guys. All of you listening south of I-80, y'all have to mask up now.
And also understand mandate vaccinations for state workers.
Oh, yeah. Anyone K through college, teachers, no matter where you are in the state, you have to, it's mandatory vaccination.
Yeah, see, that's what happens when they work the logic of their position like we did for them yesterday. Wait, so masks are so important that you have to impose a mask mandate on all the schools, but vaccinations for state workers, his position just the other day was, oh, it's a local decision, whatever that means, however that would be implemented. And now it's not going to be a local decision anymore, because what would you effectively be saying? Vaccinations are less important than vaccinations generally in my cohort, the employees that I control, you know, as their boss, the chief executive of the state workers. It's less important for me to get them vaccinated, adults, than it is for kids to wear masks in school. How do you square that? They can't. So which way do they go? The way they always go. More mandates, not fewer mandates.
And I did ask him that question yesterday, and he said, hey, Amy, I'm working with unions in order to, you know, to, and I said, you're at the unions don't want mandatory vaccinations.
Well, I know that's what he's saying. He's working with them to try to get them to agree. That's what he's saying, except that cover story doesn't work either because it wasn't, what are you doing? The question is, what is your position? Is your position that state workers should be vaccinated, that you would like to mandate they be vaccinated as a condition of work? That now is his position, but he said local control the other day. So you can't say my position is local control. Amy, I'm working with unions. Your position changed because the logic of the policy on masks and the policy on vaccinations doesn't wash for a COVIDian lockdown hack like the governor is. So now the change, again, in the direction of less freedom and potentially more political cost for him. We'll see.
They're on edge, I can tell you that much, because for him to react like that was ridiculous, and it was uncalled for. And Jordan and his PR person, this right-wing hack, you know, she won't say my name, but she tweets out that I'm a right-wing hack. I don't consider myself a right-wing hack.
Well, the question was directed to the governor. Who are you? Who is she to intervene in that question? I mean, that was really interesting. And what did she say? And it's so instructive of the attitude. What did she say? You know, stop complaining about mask wearing and kids can get back to school. Oh, I can't disagree with you. I can't ask questions. Just if you just follow orders, just do what you're
told. Do what I'm telling you to do.
Do what you're told.
You'll be fine.
And then maybe someday we'll be able to sort of dole out a little bit more freedom for your kids.
Can I tell you, though, Dan, for the past year, she used to yell at me, stop asking questions about sports. We know what we're doing. She used to yell at me the same way. And I said, you don't walk in our shoes. You don't even have kids in school. Stop. Same thing. For a year, she yelled at me that. And so now her new thing is yelling at me is stop complaining about wearing masks. Uh-huh. And I wear masks. I'm compliant. I wore a mask for 4 hours in a 105-degree gym yesterday and have been for the past month.
The issue isn't compliant. The issue is it sensible policy? And is it a pathway to delivering what they're promising to deliver, keeping kids and adults, for that matter, keeping everybody safe and saving lives? And there's no evidentiary support for it. And, oh, by the way, in Illinois, the number of deaths from COVID under the age of 20 in the last year and a half is 24.
And most of them died with COVID, not because of COVID. And there's three in Chicago.
Even still.
Three in Chicago.
24 out of 23,000 plus. And you're telling me this is the linchpin to keeping kids and adults safe, mask mandates in school. Or now, statewide, which is coming today.
Yeah, 10 a.m.
Jordan and Antioch, you're on Chicago's Morning Answer.
Hey, good morning, guys. Good for you, Amy. Keep it up. Letting your inner Dan Prof shine through a little bit yesterday. That's awesome. The reason they're getting frustrated is because the facts are overwhelming. They can't run from it anymore. And apparently they're listening, and that's why they're getting frustrated. And that's why they're so mad, because you won't just Just comply. Don't make us explain it.
Yeah, just shut up and sit down.
Absolutely. There's a lot of people out there. This is gaining traction. There's too many studies now. There was a study that came out 2 days ago showing the ineffectiveness of all these masks that you're supposed to wear. They can't hide from that. And the more you keep bludgeoning them over the head with it and making them try to present their facts that they don't have, the more people see that it's a fallacy. The more people see that they're fake.
Thanks for the call,
even
Jordan.
New York Magazine writing an article that it's inconclusive. There's no solid evidence or proof that masks work in the classroom, especially.
No, just to stop transmission generally.
Yeah.
But including in the classroom.
And we checked at Children's Hospital yesterday. They have about 20 patients with COVID. One came in with a car accident and tested positive. But they mostly have RSV right now. That's what they're treating.
Chet and Lyle.
Good morning. Ditto the previous gentleman. They're losing the narrative. They're losing control. People are paying attention. And when people use the word misinformation, my definition of misinformation is I can't argue with the facts. You have the facts on me, and I don't have a counter. That's what when they use that word misinformation, you've got them. Have a great day.
Thanks, Chet. Well, right. And what was the response? I mean, and basically, in that exchange, you heard Amy say, show me the studies. And the response was for Pritzker to get back up there. No, hey, clear the way. Let me answer this. I mean, I haven't seen him move that quickly since Old Buffet announced that they were closing.
We stop it.
So Old Country Buffet, that is, which is quite good.
Yeah.
But portion control is the key there.
Yeah.
Exactly. And he got back up there, and instead of saying, oh, you want studies? You want the science? Here's the science. He's not a scientist, but he's consulting epidemiologists, top men, people.
It's all women.
Well, okay. You know what I'm saying. It's a Family Guy reference. And thank you. Mike Scott got it. I'm glad somebody does. Somebody gets me. But he gets up there and says what? You're spreading misinformation. I'm saving lives. Well, that's not responsive to the question. That's not being on top of the details. That's not, sending a kill shot back at a member of the press corps, say, oh, you want answers? You Colonel Jessup, you want the truth? You want what I know? Okay, here it is in detail. No, he just comes over the top with the sophistry and the staged moral indignation. I'm trying to save lives and you're not.
That's such a joke.
I'm rubber and you're glue. That's the quality of his line of argumentation.
And real quickly, this is the woman, Leona Savignon. She's a parent who is out of her mind, who thinks her child is going to die if she goes to school on Monday.
Please do what is right to protect our children. We need to demand remote learning options for families that are not ready. Not everybody is vaccinated. These children deserve to be protected.
Other parents said they don't.
Yeah, well, I mean, whatever. These are just the hysterics we've been dealing with for, forever.
Because they have no leadership. He's encouraging this kind of craziness, is what I think.
These are union flacks.
Right, I understand.
They are going to do the same sort of performative moral indignation, that offer the same fact-free rants that you get from Jesse Sharkey or anybody else. So, I mean, there's a category of people
there's no getting through to them.
No, they're like politicians. There's just can't where a brain used to be. Mm-hmm. There is no mind there. There's just the repetition of phrases. Diane in Buffalo Grove.
Hi, guys. I don't have young children. I live in the suburbs, and there's little stop signs that says character counts. So, Amy, I'm wondering, since you're closest to young children, maybe 3-year-olds and toddlers, do they still teach kids to say, I'm sorry? Because our tallest toddler in all of Illinois, I'm certain that he owes you an apology.
Oh, thank you, Diane.
Thanks for the call. I don't think he's our tallest toddler, though.
He's our widest. Oh, see, I don't even want to go there.
Yeah, he definitely is.
You can, but
he's a square.
I'm not looking for an apology, and they're not going to apologize. Whatever. It just shows who they truly are.
No, it's great. I love it. Betsy in the north side.
Yes. First of all, I'd like to say I heard that interchange between Amy and the governor. If that doesn't send a chill down our spines as free people, I don't know what will. He was patronizing, shut her down. I mean, he was bullying. Let me step up to this, podium. I have to restrain myself to what I'd like to say responding it. And Amy, good for you, sweetheart. We're behind you. You're a professional.
All right. Well, you know, it's just, it makes me laugh because he's saying people shouldn't scream at school board members. Well, how about governors screaming at reporters? Well, I mean, there's a decorum and we should have better society. And then he goes and does that for no reason.
Yeah. Never. He's just trying to save lives. It's a tough business. No. He's under a lot of pressure, all the lives he's saving. Larry and Bartlett.
Hey, good morning, Dan. Amy, how dare you try and use common sense, logic, and facts in place of a nice emotional argument? Please keep up the great work. And maybe if you get close enough, kick him on his femur. Maybe he'll fall down again.
Thanks for the call, Larry. No kicking.
He Dennis, did survive the state fair this year, though.
Dennis and Crystal Lake.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. Hey, you guys. Yeah. Amy.
Hi, Dennis.
I am volunteering. I'm a big guy. I'm volunteering to be your bodyguard at every one of these things. And I don't need to shout. I just need to look at this guy. And he will shut up. And any bodyguards. I took on those two knuckleheads that used to dance in the middle of the Bulls games. And I beat them up in a bar.
Okay.
So you don't have to.
Okay. The Bulls Wait, the brothers, Bulls?
Or the right. Joey Donut,
or Benny, or Benny the Bull. Wait, did you beat up a mascot? Or thanks for the call, Dennis.
Or right, the Lovables, or what?
Yeah, they took a couple Lovables to task. The whole dance team.
Oh, okay.
So Dennis, yeah, please send in your CV. We'll be accepting applications all morning to be Amy's bodyguard.
Listen to Dan and Amy on your smartphone. Download the AM560 mobile app today at 560theanswer.com/mobile. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM560, The Answer.
Good morning, Dan and Amy, and yesterday, Secretary of State Anthony Blinken offered some numbers on what the administration believes is the number of Americans who are still in Afghanistan wanting to get out.
Yeah, and how many have been evacuated?
Over the past 24 hours, we've been in direct contact with approximately 500 additional Americans and provided specific instructions on how to get to the airport safely. We'll update you regularly on our progress in getting these 500 American citizens out of Afghanistan. For the remaining roughly 1,000 contacts that we had who may be Americans seeking to leave Afghanistan, we're aggressively reaching out to them multiple times a day through multiple channels of communication, phone, email, text messaging, to determine whether they still want to leave, and to get the most up-to-date information and instructions to them for how to do so. Some may no longer be in the country. Some may have claimed to be Americans, but turn out not to be. Some may choose to stay. We'll continue to try to identify the status and plans of these people in the coming days. Thus, from this list of approximately 1,000, we believe the number of Americans actively seeking assistance to leave Afghanistan is lower, likely significantly lower.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's something, but that took days to get that information. And do you even trust them?
Yeah, I'm seeing numbers all over the boards in terms of estimations of how many people are left. You know, and I understand the cover story that's been given, that people voluntarily register with the U.S. Embassy, not just in Afghanistan, but the world over. Americans traveling or residing the world over, it's self-reporting. You don't have to. You can. And so thus the what they know and what they're trying to find out through all of these communication channels they say they're pursuing. Yeah, maybe. But they didn't have a handle on those who had self-reported being there. Well, have they ever provided that number? What is that number? What's the number of Americans who've self-reported being in Afghanistan? And why haven't you disclosed what that number is? And why can't you tell us how much you've accomplished with respect to that number? You can't track down these individuals self-reported to the embassy. What's the number? Where is everybody on that list? Let's start there. And that's radiated out from what we know. But that's not what they've done. And they're not providing much in the way of details. Blinken saying 1,000 left, but it's much less than that because here we go again. For those who want to leave. Okay. You know, something else. You keep saying for those who want to leave. Can you give me an example of somebody who wants to stay? What do we have here? I heard there were some new condos built in downtown Kabul. Are people part-timers? We got some snowbirds there from the East Coast in Kabul.
They're going to set up a casino. Yeah,
yeah, I split time between...
there's no...
yeah, I split time between the Hamptons and Kabul.
Kabul.
I'm a New Yorker, but I summer in Kabul. You know, we like to come back late fall. Well, what the hell are you talking about? So who are the people that want to stay? Now, we have identified one, but it's not for a good reason she wants to stay.
No, she's staying for the children that she's helping raise.
Correct. Or providing cover for right now, providing safety for right now. But give us an example of a conversation you've had with somebody who wants to stay sort of permanently. I'm going to ride this one out.
Hopefully I'll get my Social Security checks mailed to me or maybe direct deposited in my bank. At 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636. Type in DA, then a quick comment.
And then we have Jen Psaki building on what Blinken announced on the evacuations, mostly Afghanis, mostly Afghans at this point.
Well, first let me say I wouldn't see it as a disconnect, and let me explain to you why. I noted earlier that, or we put out earlier today, that 19,000 people were evacuated. The vast majority in a 24-hour period, the vast majority of those were, of course, Afghans, as you know by the numbers that the Secretary of State just put out. That does mean that a great number of people are making their way into the airport and onto flights to evacuate from the country. There are certainly cases and incidents, and we have heard, you have reported, where individuals are not getting through that should get through. And we are approaching those and addressing those on a case-by-case basis as those are raised. But I would note that, again, 19,000 people in a period of time, the vast majority of them are Afghans, SIV applicants, individuals who have the appropriate paperwork to evacuate, and that was just in a 24-hour period.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay. I get off my chest.
I know some people that haven't gotten out.
Oh.
20 students and 16 parents from California.
Yeah. And here's one of the nieces who's trying to help her family member out.
She's told, you know, you don't have a guardian with you. You know, you can't travel without a male. She's told your paperwork is incorrect. She's given different excuses.
And had to try to go through 7 checkpoints to get to the airport. And every time she just ends up going back to her apartment because there's no way because she's a female traveling alone.
School
an American from California.
Well, 20 students, 16 parents from this school district in Darrell Issa's district in California. The school board president there telling the LA Times they purchased flights out of Afghanistan before the beginning of the school year on August 17th, but are unable to leave the country now. Unfortunately, they were not able to get to the airport. So what about them? You know, first we don't have numbers. Then we have numbers that are all over the map. And then we have sort of everything is going swimmingly sort of rap from Psaki. And yet we have stories after stories that are significant. I mean, 20 students, 20 kids and 16 parents from a California school district. That's
a big deal.
That's a significant story.
That's a significant amount of people.
What do they have to say about that?
What's Darrell Issa doing to help them? Huh? I mean, also too, the Biden administration is sending mixed signals about those Americans who may not make it out on time. You know, Biden's staying with the August 31st deadline that he created himself. And then Blinken's like, no, that's not the case.
But let me be crystal clear about this. There is no deadline on our work to help any remaining American citizens who decide they want to leave to do so, along with the many Afghans who have stood by us over these many years and want to leave and have been unable to do so. That effort will continue every day past August 31st.
Yeah, that's all well and good. It gets a lot more difficult after August 31st with no American troops on the ground, doesn't it? Doesn't it?
A lot more dangerous.
Work is going to continue. Oh, when they're formally hostages, and now we're having to Bo Bergdahl them out of Afghanistan.
Well, he even said there might be an ISIS attack.
It's hard to overstate the complexity and the danger of this effort. We're operating in a hostile environment in a city and country now controlled by the Taliban with the very real possibility of an ISIS-K attack.
Well, yeah, no kidding. We know this. I mean, Anthony Blinken is a guy who basically says what everybody already knows to be true, but he says it in sort of a sober voice, so it's supposed to have authority. This guy's just describing what everybody you just figured that out?
Right, that's what I'm saying. It took him this long.
Come on. Marco Rubio tweeted out, State Department admits 4,100 Americans remaining in Kabul alone, but claims some of them are deciding not to leave. This is a lie. Taliban isn't allowing American women through their checkpoints without a male guardian and are blocking non-citizen family members of U.S. citizens. So Blinken, you heard him say yesterday, 1,000, but it's much less than that because people don't want to leave. People don't have their papers, blah, 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 all of the categories he gave. Rubio's got it at 4,100. I mean, and we still don't have any sort of foundational list, as I was describing, the self-reporting to the embassy in Kabul. And no sense of what they've added to that through these communication efforts they've described for the last week. I mean, this is still a complete cluster as far as I can tell. Terry and Rogers Park are in Chicago's Morning Answer.
Yeah. Is it possible the majority of those Afghan soldiers and citizens only cooperated with America's military all these years because they were well paid?
Well, I mean, so they were paid, so what's your point? So what?
It's a job. I mean,
well, that's why they caved in so fast.
Well, again, thanks for this storyline of they caved in so fast. So 65,000 Afghan security forces have been killed in battle. 65,000. And we pull air power, air support, and intel on the ground. And they see America is out and the Taliban is in, and then it's time to figure out how I'm going to survive. So it's a little bit more complicated. Oh, they stop paying us and then we cut and run. And that's a little bit more than that. And by the way, there are stories too about resistance still and those that are still fighting the Taliban outside of Kabul, Afghan security forces, including there was a Wall Street Journal profile on one guy who was educated, I think, at King's College in New York City and is leading the resistance in a part of Afghanistan. So let's not be so dismissive of the fight that the Afghan security forces put in, that the Afghan people who do want to live in freedom, who don't want to live under Islamofascists. Let's not be so dismissive of that. It's complicated. There's a lot of motivations, a lot of interests being served. A lot of people doing heroic things and some people doing not very heroic things. But that's on our side, too. Bob in Edison Park.
Yeah, guys, it gets so bizarre, this world anymore. I don't even, my head spins. I don't even know what to think. Like everybody else, I want everybody out of Afghanistan, all our people and all our allies. But at the end of the day, I am glad we're out of there. And I want to point to a Breitbart story that came out yesterday about the last Jewish man who's living in Afghanistan. And I guess he's an Israeli-American. Israeli-American sent a contingent of over there to get him out. Once they got there, he refused to leave until they gave him $50,000 for his divorce and a bunch of other stipulations. So he decided to stay. I mean, that's the problem when you intervene in these world events with no plan and basically the intervention itself being misguided. It's so convoluted, the truth. And if this guy wants to stay, I don't know what they're supposed to do. I mean, this is just beyond the pale of insanity. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Bob. By the way, those two members of Congress, one Democrat, one Republican, Pete Meyer and Michigan, Seth Moulton of Massachusetts, they say, you know, sort of providing a doubling down on what was said by Adam Schiff, the chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, earlier in the week. We're not going to be done evacuing people by August 31st. They say, those two congressmen who were on the ground talking to commanders, we're not going to be done by September 11th. So now think about that. Think about Americans being held hostage in Afghanistan on the
20th anniversary
of 9/11. Think about that possibility. Joe in Tinley Park.
Yeah, I can see pallets of money being delivered at
in the dark
midnight.
Of night. Yeah, right. Huh. Iran style. Thanks, Joe. Diane in Buffalo Grove.
Hi, yes. Scott Parnell, who was running for office, I believe, in Pennsylvania, he had been a platoon leader in Afghanistan not too many years ago. And he says, initially, he said, gee, I thought that our translator was like family. We were tight with him. We trusted him. He liked us. And on one of the last little missions, he said, all of a sudden, we saw in the horizon on a little hilltop, all the villagers were looking at us. And he said, in an instant, when we realized that our translator was gone, we were blown up, and I buried one of my men. So it's not to say, of course, that all translators are bad or that they all have to be good, but they all have to be vetted.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Thanks for the call, Diane. And vetting is a whole other piece of this. There was somebody who had been evac'd to Qatar who apparently had ties to ISIS. And so the quality of the vetting process for those that are extracted and then have America as their final destination, a whole nother topic area. Exactly. Complicated. Marvin, Burlington, Wisconsin.
Hey, how are you this morning?
Good.
I just was curious. What's the backstory of those students and teachers that are in Kabul?
It's students and
their parents.
And parents. It was a trip to visit extended family. It was not a school district trip. It was a personal trip, and
okay.
They were on special visas for...
Yeah, because I'm thinking, what parent thinks it's a good idea to send their kid to Kabul for some kind of school thing?
No,
not like a student exchange program or anything.
Yeah,
it was.
And if they want danger, if they want danger, they can just go to the south and west sides of Chicago on a weekend. You know, I mean, live it up.
Thanks, Marvin. Ari in Lincolnshire.
He laughs, but we live here.
Hi, good morning, guys. Good morning. I was just wondering, and I think the man before me touched on it. Besides the military, what are these people doing there? I mean, I understand they have family, but, you know, we have countries that Americans can't travel to. Up until recently, you couldn't go to Cuba. You can't go to North Korea. So what is the backstory? What are these tens of thousands of people doing there?
Well, I think a lot of them are contractors and academics and those with NGOs nonprofits. I think it's a mix. I don't have a handle on how many people fall into which bucket, but, you can imagine, people that do, missionary work, people that are involved in nonprofits trying to preserve, I don't know, basic human rights in places that are not particularly keen on abiding people's human rights, plus military contractors, family, you know. Kent and Aurora.
So they have no idea how many Americans are there in Afghanistan. How will they know when they're finished evacuating?
Yeah, I know. That's the question I've been asking the entire time. Thanks, Kent. Yeah, how do you know?
They'll text them.
We're going to get out on August 31st, and then we're going to wait for news outlets to report stories of people are stranded, and then just sort of try to game plan one by one or group by group how we get people out who now are in a situation where there's no ground support and the Taliban is completely in charge. That should work out well.
This is the morning show. More Chicago radio listeners are choosy. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. To borrow from outgoing New York City Mayor Warren Wilhelm, you know, we tried to be nice. They try to be nice to you, and yet all have they have gotten in return is insolence. And they're not taking it anymore. Governor Pritzker is done taking the misinformation of one Amy Jacobson, who's in this room right now.
Yeah, hello. Oh, hi.
Purveyor of misinformation.
Yes.
And the Kenosha School Board, north of the Cheddar Curtain there, got a bit rowdy. Kenosha School Board is not going to conduct business if you don't stand on your idiot circle.
Yes, everybody, social distance now.
We will not begin the meeting until we have the social distancing in this room that we require.
But so you know what the parents did? They started reciting the pledge.
For the land of the free.
They sang, and then they cited the Pledge of Allegiance, and then more people came in. It was wall to wall.
Find a bigger venue, so I will adjourn the meeting, and we will hold it on another day.
She had to adjourn the meeting and hold it on another day. They were shocked at how many parents showed up because they don't want a mask mandate for their kids. They just want parental choice. Not anti-mask, but they want a choice.
My concern is for my young.
I feel that this was a cop-out, and it was a sign of cowardice that they were afraid to face the people.
Oh, well, boy.
You think?
So the mask or the mask and the scales have dropped from some people's eyes, haven't they? It's a sign of cowardice. They're afraid to face the people. Yeah. Wheaton, Warrenville, south to north of the Cheddar Curtain in Kenosha. Yeah, they're afraid to face the people, so they'll adjourn, especially if you catch them flat-footed. They need to regroup and game plan for people who, in the immortal words of one Governor Spaulding, like to shout at school boards.
Yeah, they're scared and weak-kneed school board members, you know. And one student there, her name is Emma Meadows. She's a junior this year. She said it best. Listen to this.
I'm very pro-choice for masks. My last school year was completely ruined by having to wear masks. I felt like I was treated like a disease.
I was treated like a disease. And that's what we're doing to our kids, and her father agrees.
It was devastating to watch her lose her motivation, her excitement for education.
312-642-5600, turnkey.pro. Answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Well, we're going to have an indoor mask mandate statewide effective this morning. It is anticipated.
It's coming.
So who are you going to confront about that?
Anyone age 2 or older, regardless of vaccination status, has to wear a mask indoors in the entire state of Illinois.
Here's another question, too. I mean, just for the fun of it, I know there's no reason to take whatever the answer is seriously. But just to, you know, to throw out some numbers that we can kick around and pretend that we have a plan and we're serious about this and it's all driven by science and data analysis. So what are the metrics to impose a mandate, and what's the threshold to withdraw the mandate for masks, for all spaces, for schools? Do we have numbers? Have they put out numbers?
No. I asked, too, when can kids in school not wear masks? What are the metrics? And they don't have an answer.
No, tell me. Well, then they should be pressed on it. Just tell me. Make up a number for me. And I don't care what it's. It doesn't have to be hospitalizations and deaths. You can go with cases. It's fine. You can go with the number of people that people think look like they may have COVID. Sound like COVID. I don't care what it is. Just give me a threshold category and number so that we can all play along with this. Wouldn't that be fun?
Pritzker also announcing today a vaccine mandate for all teachers K-12 and higher education statewide. So if you teach at Chicago State and U of I, you have to have a vaccine.
And state workers.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Anyone who does not get a COVID vaccine will have to submit for weekly COVID testing. How are they going to gather all this information about who's been vaxxed and who's been not? And
Well, you'll
have, CPS doesn't have a plan.
You'll have to
just carry their cards with
present
them.
A Vax card and
to get your check, maybe to get your paycheck.
We'll see if
how's this going to work.
We'll see if they're as good at identifying phony Vax cards as
they did at Lollapalooza.
Well, yeah, but actually, there have been some interdictions of phony Vax cards. There was one.
Oh, yeah, the pharmacist. What do you?
No, Vax cards. There was one in Tennessee where they actually, I think it was Tennessee, where law enforcement seized a bunch of
there was
fake cards.
A pharmacist in Chicago, in Rogers Park, who got arrested because he was selling fake. They're real vaccination cards that he took from his employer and was selling online. Yes. $10 a pop.
So we'll see. We'll see. But, I mean, that's it. So Vax passports are here. And this is across the board, too. So you have Vax mandates, and then you have the passive-aggressive mandates like Delta Airlines is doing.
Did you hear this? Delta Airlines, if you do not get vaccinated, you have to pay $200 a month to your employer. And they're saying, well, the reason we're charging $200 a month is because the average hospitalization stay costs their company $40,000.
Hmm. Interesting. So is that just with COVID, or is it average hospitalization stays with respect to anything? What about the flu? And for
giving birth,
are you going to? Well, I mean, how about you get a virus, and it puts you out of commission, and you didn't get the flu shot? Will they also be charged a couple hundred bucks a month, or whatever the average hospital stay is based on previous? Medical history for Delta employees who've gotten the flu?
I mean, it's a $200 monthly surcharge that starts in November.
It's just, again,
unbelievable.
It's just passive aggressive ways to force vaccinations without forcing them, without giving the appearance of forcing them. That's all this is. Gain compliance. And then we're already going to be, I mean, forget getting vaccinated, by the way, because so many people have been. And because so many people now are seeing the vaccine's effectiveness wane, now we're going to be, instead of 8 months in a booster, it looks like regulators are going to clear booster shots for 6 months after vaccination. So this is going to quickly move to boosters, too. Vaccinations, well, people are still getting sick. People are still hospitalized, particularly the vaccine in Israel, as we've talked about, for example. And that's just one example. So we got to mandate the booster. Or fine you $200 if you don't get the booster. And you still got to wear a mask because who knows? We'll have to see. We've got a lot of encouraging results about how effective the booster is against the variant. That's what all the stories are now, just like the stories about the Pfizer, Moderna, and J&J vaccines in the run-up to those coming to market and being deployed. And then reality intrudes. And the effectiveness of vaccine wanes over time, and now we're going to be on to the same circle.
And don't think
heralded news. This is going to be great. This is the path back to normalcy. And then we'll find out that it's a little bit more complicated than that. And then we'll go back to mask mandates and vax booster mandates and maybe lockdowns, too. Why not?
Well, that's part of the list, too. And I asked Pritzker yesterday, you know, are you going to shut down in-person learning? And he didn't say no. He said, well, it's on the list, but it's at, you know, I hope not to do that. I hope, you know,
they
out
hope,
of an abundance
hope,
of gosh.
They hope not to do all the things they end up doing.
Yeah.
I didn't want to do it. I'm always pressed into it by the science and data. I'm pressed into it by my commitment to save lives, really. Yeah. Yeah, a lot of people believe that.
And folks, if you want, I mean, if your scholarships are on the line or anything, move out of Illinois now, because it is coming.
By the way, the first high school, I believe this is the first high school, to impose a vaccine mandate on students, DePaul College Prep.
What?
DePaul College Prep telling parents last night, requiring students to get the COVID jab if they want to attend school. Principal Megan Stanton Anderson said non-COVID vaccinated students could technically still pay DePaul Prep's $15,000 annual tuition and try to attend the school, but that she would be instituting new policies that would prevent those students from participating in school activities, as well as making it more difficult for them to earn a diploma.
That's funny. We play them today in volleyball. Huh. Also, wish I asked people if they have their vaccination cards.
Remote learning will not be available for quarantine individuals, and days of quarantine will be counted as a normal absence if you get sick. Really? So they're just adopting what the colleges are adopting. No, we're not vaccine mandating. But if you do get sick and you you have to quarantine per policy, then that will negatively impact your academic record. That would negatively impact your grades. That's, again, passive-aggressive vaccine mandate. So DePaul College Prep is the first high school, I think, in Illinois to do this.
Yeah. Any religious exemptions there or medical exemptions? I'm sure not religious because most of the people that go to Catholic schools are Catholic, but some aren't.
Rich in Indian Head Park.
Yes, good morning, Dan. Good morning, Amy. All these mandates and getting vaccinated and all the things they keep talking about, why isn't there no mandates on this concert by Kanye West tonight?
Why isn't there?
My understanding.
Yeah, why isn't there?
I'll ask today.
I know. Yes, we talked about it yesterday. So no mask, no vax, Soldier Field, Kanye, right. Tonight. Right. Why?
How do they get away with that?
Why? I don't know. Why? What do you think?
I think it's a farce. I think... maybe because they're getting money out of this concert somehow.
They were getting money out of Lollapalooza, and there was a vax or negative COVID test mandate. No such thing for Kanye tonight. Why?
I have no idea. They're very selective on what they do. They don't make any sense.
Thanks for the call, Rich. Yeah, aren't they? What could it
be? I'll be sure to ask that today.
What could it possibly be? Well, you asked that of Lightfoot. That's
Lightfoot's call. Right, the Lightfoot call.
Huh. I wonder. It's a head scratcher. I wonder what that could be. Why? No problem at the Kanye. And again, I'm not opposed to Kanye's position. Yeah, I don't see any reason. No vax, no.
No mandates whatsoever for tonight's concert.
No
sold
vax,
out
no
crowd.
COVID tests, no masks. Great. Okay, fine. It'd be fine with me. If I liked Kanye's music, I'd maybe go.
Oh, I love his music.
I think I like Love Lockdown. That's a good tune.
I like Power.
Yeah.
But anyway,
he's an interesting cat, whatever. But so I don't have a problem with him saying this is what I'd like to see for my concert. Great. And people want to attend. Great. Why? Why is there nobody talking about that? Huh? What could it possibly be? How is that different from Lollapalooza? Huh? Boy, that's a real conundrum. It's a real riddle. I wonder. Larry in Elmhurst.
Hey, good morning. Hey, will they count them as days absent, too, if they get shot, like in the city of Chicago, too?
Oh, that's also on you. Yes, that's right, Larry. Thanks for the call. Yeah. Anytime recuperating from a bullet wound also will go on your permanent record. Yeah, your grades will suffer as a result. Yeah. DePaul Prep, DePaul College Prep.
Hmm.
So forward-looking. Phil in Willowbrook.
Hi, a teacher and got 14 years left to work. I do not want to get this shot. I'm looking for any help I can get. Advice on doctors or religious exemption, something. I do not believe in this shot. I believe in it for older people, not for a healthy person under 50. So I'm looking for any advice, help, anything. And I know Amy's got a great affection for our governor, so looking for a little help.
Well, Phil, stop by the Elmhurst Cigar House, maybe, and we can chat about
Sean,
it.
Sean can help me out there?
Yeah. No, Dan will be there. Yeah. You want advice from Dan, not Sean.
Other people, yeah. Yeah, thanks for the call, Phil.
He's more level-headed, Dan is, than Sean.
Well,
but, yeah, that's a great question. What do you do?
Yeah.
Because you'll lose your job if you don't get it.
Yeah.
And you have no freedoms anymore or choice.
I understand. It's tough. It's going to be tough on some people. This has been, these mandates and lockdowns have been tough on a lot of people for a long time. We think, for example, everybody just got PPP and they're fine. Who cares about small businesses? Boring. Who cares about small-time landlords? Boring. Their financial interests are of no concern to us. We're out there saving lives. Somebody who's been in the fight against the lockdown policies, these mandates from the beginning, is Ian Smith, the owner of Attila's Gym in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
He recently updated us on the costs that he has borne to stand against the machine.
All right, legal update, guys, from the Attilus Gym. We are 16, going on 17 months, I believe, into this nonsense with Governor Murphy and the state of New Jersey. As you guys know, we were fined quite a bit of money, $15,497.76 per day for every day that we were open. The state already took a bunch of money from us to the tune of $173,000 from our bank account. They drained the business dry. Judge Robert Lugi then decided that the state could pierce through the LLC and hold Frank and I personally responsible for the hundreds of thousands of dollars of fines. Looking like that day is now coming. We received an information subpoena for our financial records. We have no choice but to fill this out. We can be incarcerated if we don't. So we'll fill it out. We will keep fighting. We have an appeals process going on, and we're going to open our gym no matter what Governor Murphy or anybody says. But it is likely that we will have some commie hands reaching into our pockets very soon. More to come.
He's a lot more he's a lot more even-handed about it than I'd be, I'll tell you that. I think history is going to remember people like Ian Smith very kindly, and people like Phil Murphy, J.B. Pritzker, Gretchen Whitmer, Andrew Cuomo, Gavin Newsom.
Wolf.
Very poorly.
Tom Wolf, yeah.
Very poorly.
And if Gavin Newsom goes down, who doge?
Chris and Carrie.
Hey, good morning, guys. One real quick thing before I get to my point. I recently flew on a Spirit Airlines flight. I was probably one of maybe five black or white people on the plane. This white stewardess got so fed up with asking the passengers, the other passengers in the flight, to pull up their masks and turn on the music and this and that. They just gave up, and they continued to spend the rest of the flight without their masks on. So, you know, I'm all for taking them off, but if I have to wear a mask, I think everybody else should. But my point that I called in with was, why isn't Pritzker calling out the highest population in Chicago, the black and brown communities? I mean, call them out.
They're sending people into their communities, knocking on doors. They know who you are if you haven't been vaccinated, and they actually ring your doorbell, which is some pretty scary stuff. But yeah, the government's, you know, they're trying, but I don't know about vaccine shaming. Calling them out. What do you think?
They're not. Are they trying? What are they really doing? We're going out and educating. I mean, first of all, it's the typical patronizing attitude towards minorities that you see from the left. Same thing with vaccines. It's not possible that a black or brown American would choose, with all due consideration, based on good information, to not get vaccinated. It's not possible. So they need some apparatchik from the central office to go educate them about why they should do what they're told. They're trying. And they're victims of misinformation from people like Amy Jacobson. You heard from that from Governor Pritzker yesterday. You're victimizing people while he's trying to save them. That's the storyline. But it's not political for them.
No, not at all.
Mm-mm. Don't think that for a second. Ben and Racine.
Yeah, good morning, Dan and Amy. We got a lot of Illinois people coming up here, you know, and they're telling us about you guys down there. But the thing about us up here, we're fighting with the governor right here. He's a nutcase, too.
Yeah, Evers is another one. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, he's one card short of a death, too. But we're fighting like hell with him up here. He's trying to pull all kinds of stuff up here.
Like what? And, mask mandates, or what's he trying to pull?
Oh, yeah, sure. He wants to do that. But you told him, put everybody in jail. Lock everybody up. Lock everybody up, you know. We'll all go to jail. I'll bet you half of our beach. I live on a lakeside up here, okay? And what's happening up here is we fight with him all the time. He's trying to do something right now over here. And we said, go ahead, put us all in jail. And even our police said they're too. They won't enforce the law with him up here because they said they're going to have to put all the police in jail in too.
Thanks for the call, Ben. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Strength in numbers.
And we wish we had that in Illinois.
More Illinoisans are coming. We also wish we had a Republican Party in Illinois. We don't have that. Wisconsin does, and they control their state legislature, which is why Evers has been neutered a bit, unlike here.
You've made the switch. and it feels so good. You switch to Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Let's talk CA and GA, California and Georgia. Start with California. CNN talked to three Democrat socialist, and yeah, they are Democrat socialist. Democrat socialist women about Newsom amid a report, stunning for CNN, that Newsom is seeing his support among self-identified Democrats dwindling, and this has put him in jeopardy of being recalled come September 14th and having Larry Elder installed as the governor of California. I don't even like to say it out loud.
I don't either.
I don't want to jinx it. Here is what these women had to say to one of the fungible CNN reporters about Newsom.
Democrat.
Registered Democrat.
Lifelong Democrat.
Yep.
You'd think rejecting the recall of Democratic Governor Gavin Newsom would be a no-brainer for these three Los Angeles voters. But it's not.
You know, I have to say I'm really leaning very heavily towards the recall.
To recalling the governor.
Yeah. You know, I'm disappointed in the Democratic Party in general.
Disappointed with the party in control, with a supermajority of California state government. While problems grow. Wildfires, drought, crime, cost of living. But the worst for them? Homelessness, which has expanded through the pandemic, now in neighborhoods across middle-class Los Angeles, including their own.
It's like, let me work, let me pay my taxes, but provide me with safety and not be accosted by two homeless people within the matter of 15 minutes.
Is this Governor Newsom's fault?
I mean, technically, how can I even answer that? He's the leader. It's everything starts from the top. In my mind, when he was running, there was nobody else in the world that would have been better. And instead, it's become politics.
Well, it's such an insight on a couple of levels. One, for that woman, Gavin Newsom, when he was elected 2 years ago, it was going to be there was no one better. And then it became politics. What are you talking about? It's always politics. They're politicians. You're elected officials, and somehow they're practicing politics instead of providing, you know, statemently leadership. Come on. Have you been an adult for 5 minutes? And I can tell you she has. This is the problem with the electorate, generally speaking, in places like California. But it's also instructive that they have been mugged by reality, because here's why California is so important. Yes, it's about COVID policy and crime policy. But it's even bigger than that, because California was supposed to be the epitome of what a progressive America would mean. This is where we're going to do all the things. We're going to mandate the elimination of electric cars. We're going to pursue all the apocalyptic climate change policies at breakneck speed. We're going to not prosecute criminals. We're going to treat the homeless as a mental health issue and sort of ignore the quality of life issue of middle income and, frankly, upper income, because there's not many middle income families left in California. This was going to be a tour de force in competency. We're going to solve homelessness, war on homelessness, war on poverty. We're going to educate the kids. We're going to do all these things. And that place is a third world country with pockets of wealth. California ranks 49th out of 50 in state education performance. 49th out of 50. California, the progressive dreamland. San Francisco has the worst test scores for black students of any county in the state. San Francisco County. Progressive politics at work.
Probably didn't help that they didn't have any in-person learning last year either.
the and you see the well, that's right. Of course, that exacerbated and the outmigration, right? California losing a congressional seat for the first time in its history. Even as the percentage of further exacerbating the decline in the percentage of people who identify as Republican there. Joel Kochan writing about this at Spiked Online. Even if the recall fails to oust Newsom, a close vote would suggest trouble ahead for progressives, not only in California, but across the United States. There's a growing gap between the Democrats backed by Wall Street and Silicon Valley, as Newsom is, and the vast swaths of their own historic base. A close call, a recall victory would send a stinging rebuke to the Democrat elites. They now face the prospect of losing constituencies that they long saw as essential to maintaining power. And that's exactly right. And Joel Kochan, who's out that way, and you know, sort of a reformed man of the center left because of what's actually been produced by these leftist policies. Kevin Williamson wrote about it, too, in the hysterical piece he had in the New York Post we referenced the other day, where so desperate is the left, the LA, Black Lives Matter, the LA Times, the constituencies, the Marxist constituencies of the Democrat Socialist Party. Larry Elder is the black face of white supremacy. That's their that's their tag on Larry Elder. But they're hysterical. And what they're finding out is, you know, that's all fun and games when, as that one woman said, I'm not being accosted by homeless people on, outside my front door. When I can afford to live in California as opposed to being pushed out by confiscatory taxes and mandates that make the cost of living that much higher. That's all fun and good until, you know, as Kochan also points out, the regulatory policies tied to the climate change zeitgeist pushed major companies in energy, home construction, manufacturing, civil engineering that traditionally employed middle-skilled workers out. So job growth has been concentrated in low-pay sectors like hospitality. Over the past decade, 80% of California jobs, according to one study, have paid under the median wage. Half of these paid less than 40 grand. And you cannot live well on 40 grand in California.
No. 312-642-5600, turnkey.pro, answer line 64636, type in DA, then a quick comment.
Jay in Palo Alto.
Hey, first of all, I just want to say thanks for taking my call. I love your guys' show. And
thank you.
You're the only bit of sanity that I have out here in Palo Alto. I moved out here for work about 6 months ago, and, you know, to your point, it is absolutely a third world country. It is a wasteland, and you know, I pay astronomical amounts of money to live here, and nothing's being done about it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely not a single thing is being done about it. Mm-hmm. So,
well, are you going to vote in the recall election?
So yeah, I actually just registered to vote, and
Larry,
I did register to vote, and you know, Every ad that I hear about Gavin Newsom is, you know, we need him back because he's going to keep, you know, our COVID protocol in place. And that's the only thing that they're hanging on to. So thanks for taking my call, guys.
Thanks for the call, Jay. Probably the only thing that's still popular there is the mask mandate. So,
well, that's what Pritzker, I mean, themselves. He spent so much, every ad, campaign ad of his is, oh, he's doing such a good job saving lives and protecting Illinoisans.
Well,
there's nothing else to run on. What else has he accomplished?
Well, yeah, there's that. But
people love it. Oh, mask me up.
Yeah.
Lock me down, baby. Let's go.
But, you know, oftentimes in politics, you see people make the mistake between hanging their hat on something that's popular rather than on something that actually animates people's vote. So, you know, I might agree with you on some issue that isn't very important to me, but I disagree with you on an issue that's very important to me. So that means you got a problem, because the issue that is animating my vote, we're on opposite sides. And this is what you heard from those three Democrat socialist women CNN interviewed. I'm sure they're, you know, probably COVID sympathetic, if not COVID enthusiastic about Newsom. But the problem is, again, that woman, when I go outside my front door and I get accosted by two homeless people, that's a problem. Yeah. And it didn't used to be that way. It is that way now. He's the governor. He's got to go. That's the calculus. What's important to me is what's happening on my front step. Yeah, okay, I may agree about some of this other stuff. My front step.
Yeah. And now they're in your face.
It's really interesting. And again, so yes, this would be the first real reckoning, and it would be indisputable. It would send socialists reeling in a way that Cuomo's departure does not. But that larger point that Kotkin makes that I was making earlier about the indictment of leftism that it would mean if he was recalled, or even if it's close in a state where you're 2.5-1, a Dem socialist to Republicans, it would really be something. Because remember Gavin Newsom. Now, this is Gavin Newsom flying high before the French Laundry imbroglio. Last year, at the outset of the COVID policies, as we were moving towards lockdowns, including there in California, listen.
You know, when this pandemic ends, and it will end soon, we're not going to go back to normal. Because I think we all agree, normal was never good enough. You know, normal accepts inequity. That's why Latinos are dying from COVID at a higher rate than any other racial or ethnic group. And while essential workers' wages aren't enough for them to afford the essentials, and why mothers have been leaving the workforce in staggering numbers. Look, our eyes are wide open to what's wrong. And so our journey back must also be a path to close those inequities. There is no economic recovery, no economic recovery without economic justice.
Wait, what a mimbo. He's a good looking guy. He's tall, but he is dumb upstairs. And mother's leaving the workforce because you shut the schools down, you idiot.
Well,
I mean, he's so stupid.
Well, here's the thing, though, too. This is an opportunity to remake America. You hear it there. Right. And you know, he's playing identitarian politics right out of the gate. Latinos are dying at a higher rate. Well, that was true initially, and then that flattened out, and it wasn't true anymore. But you never get the correction because he thought he got the identitarian value he needed from that moment. But it was going to be – this is before you heard Build Back Better. Before Build Back Better, we're going to create heaven on earth in California. And in the process of attempting that, they've made California hell on earth, haven't they? And that's why Gavin Newsom is on the precipice of being removed. Stunning reversal of fortune in less than a year, really. John in Portage Park.
Hi. I just wanted to say I really hope Larry Elder wins, but I just don't see it happen. I think they're going to cheat, and I think it's going to be just a redo of, you know, the national election in 2020. It's just, I don't see how we ever win an election again with this voting. They've got it locked up, Dan.
Thanks for the call, John. I mean, yeah, we'll see.
I mean, look at this. They found a man passed out in his car with Xanax, a loaded gun, and 300 recall ballots that all had actual barcodes on them that correspond to a voter. That should cause great alarm. I mean,
well, Xanax, a gun, and 300 ballots. I mean, who hasn't been there, passed out in your car
at a 7-Eleven?
Who hasn't been there on a Saturday night?
So bad.
You know, I had a little bit too much malt liquor, but
I mean, I'm sure Larry Elder's people are aware of this, and
that's probably a
and
precinct
the drop
worker.
Drop boxes. Oh yeah, probably a precinct worker. Probably, and he put them in brown paper bag like there was cash in it or something.
That's probably a Zucker box distributor. Yeah, there. So, I mean, right. I mean, look, ballot integrity is always important, including a recall. And I think, I think this is going to be a mostly mail-in election.
Yeah.
In California.
Yep.
Jordan and Antioch.
Hey, good morning again. Isn't that indicative of everything, though, that you see with the Democrats? Like, everything is fine until it gets in my backyard. Like, we want all these things. We want the taxes.
Yeah, that's so true.
All the time. I pick up in areas on the north suburb, way north, like right on the state line, right? And there's a lot of people fleeing the city in that area. And then they come up here and it's like, why would you move here? The taxes are crazy. Like, oh, no, we love it. We only pay $14,000 for our postage stamp instead of $40. Oh, so you're going to vote the next tax increase until it gets to that point and then leave again? That's just the way it is. So we got to find out what is it that's going to drive them against. Obviously, it's not crime and taxes. So what is it? We got to start importing homeless people? I don't know.
Yeah, thanks for the culture. Well, no, right. I mean, that's you have the champagne socialist set that's, you know, all for banning fossil fuels. But they wouldn't be real thrilled about a wind farm on the lakefront in Wilmette. You know what I mean? Yeah. Not for them, for the hoi polloi to execute and, as necessary, be executed.
The stories you need to know to start your day. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560, The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. Yesterday, Jen Psaki, White House mouthpiece, got a query, just a status check that Peter Ducey wanted. Is it still, are we still on the same page with respect to America's longstanding policy on terrorists?
Excellent. Just as these negotiations about safe passage for Americans and SIV holders continue, why haven't we heard the president say the United States does not negotiate with terrorists? Is that still the U.S. policy?
Well, of course it is, Peter, but I would also say that there's a reality that the Taliban is currently controlling large swaths of Afghanistan. That is a reality on the ground. And right now our focus and our priority is getting American citizens evacuated and our Afghan partners evacuated. And I would say, given the numbers that we've outlined and briefed for you, that we've had made a great deal of progress in doing exactly that. Okay, go ahead, John.
Yeah, I'm a little bit dubious on the last point, but we don't negotiate with terrorists except when we do.
Because we are currently.
Dan Henninger, writing in the Wall Street Journal, calling for the Republican Party to fill the void in discernible foreign policy the administration has left. The baseline for Republican foreign policy, he writes, should be a recognition that the future is not about avoiding quote-unquote endless wars, but about showing about the U.S. showing the world it will spend what is needed to create a credible deterrent against wars and acts of terror. The Taliban's refusal to extend the Biden August 31st deadline proves we do not have that now. For more on this topic, pleased to be joined by Tom Bailey, weekly columnist for Spiked Online, former staff writer at World Finance, The New Economy, and European CEO. Tom, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
So the void that Dan Henninger writes about against the backdrop of what you've heard from Psaki and the whole national security team over the last week, how do you see America being received since you wrote about this in a recent piece in Spiked Online, you know, China's interests in Afghanistan versus America's interests and how those with interests are viewing what's happening. So how is America seeing, how are other people, other adversaries of America seeing this play out right now?
Well, there's a very popular view going around that the idea is that, obviously America left Afghanistan and supposedly abandoned its allies, that this will kind of strike fear into, countries in the Baltics, in Europe, your allies in South Korea and Taiwan, that, you know, America might just up and leave one day, leaving them to defend for themselves. I'm not quite sure. This is obviously a very popular view, and you've seen it kind of propagated quite a lot in China, in Chinese press too. And I think we should be quite skeptical of this view, though, still, because it's a very different situation of what happened in Afghanistan and your longstanding commitments to security in Europe and Asia, which are all viable states with, you know, they're not locked in civil wars. They have their own defense forces, which are fairly capable.
Well, yeah, okay, I can see that point. But in terms of Central Asia, as you wrote about, and I agree with you, you know, China's perspective on this was that we'd be there and, we and the Taliban, the United States and the Taliban, would spend the next 200 years like we've spent the last 20. That's ideal for them because it keeps the Taliban and their posture towards Uyghur militants, for example, at bay, and it keeps America hunkered down in Afghanistan.
Yeah, well, China's main interest, I think, is primarily is stability in Afghanistan. And there's obviously on a very simple level, it's similar to America's, but it's very two different ways of viewing it. So obviously America's approach was to try and construct a modern, somewhat democratic nation state as a way to stabilize the country and stop it being used as a launch pad to for foreign terror groups to attack the world. Whereas China takes a much more pragmatic view in the sense of they're happy to deal with anyone. They're happy to have relations with the Afghan government that just fell. They've had relations with the Taliban for many years, and they're going to pursue relations with the Taliban for many years with the idea in mind of stopping Afghanistan being used as a launching pad for attacks on China by militant Uyghur groups.
Yeah, but in terms of stability there, the Chinese don't want stability if it comes in the form of something what some of the nation builders in this country wanted to see happen in Afghanistan, because that would be essentially U.S. sponsored, just like they didn't want Afghanistan to become a Soviet client state, and so they supported the Mujahideen in the 40 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, China definitely took the view of it didn't quite know what it wanted in the 2010s in terms of and 2000s in terms of how Afghanistan should look. Obviously, having a big U.S. military presence so close in Afghanistan and the other Central Asian states who used to supply the mission in Afghanistan made uncomfortable, as well as the prolonged and increased relationship, at least in the 2000s, between U.S. and Pakistan also worried it. But I think China was happy to resign itself to having relatively good relations with a U.S.-backed regime in Afghanistan. They kind of pursued various initiatives from the 2010s. With kind of an eye towards America actually leaving. But so I think China kind of takes the world as it comes. I think it would have been comfortable with a prolonged occupation of Afghanistan by US forces. Now that's come to an end, they can obviously rub their hands with glee that their major adversary has taken a bloody nose. But ultimately, they would have worked either way with whatever was the case.
And is China going to become Taliban Afghanistan's biggest investor?
Well, there's lots of talk on this because of the large mineral wealth found in Afghanistan, largely untapped. You see kind of various estimates about like $1 trillion worth of various mineral wealth, whether it's lithium, copper, gold, gems, etc. And I think obviously China would like to kind of invest more in Afghanistan to get its hands on some of its resources, but it's still a very kind of perilous situation. Afghanistan is logistically a mess. It's got, in terms of roads, very poor roads. It's got very little in the way of a railway system, other infrastructure you need for kind of heavy mining. And so China will be happy to pursue commercial relationship with a Taliban-ruled Afghanistan, as it was with the previous Afghanistan. But the first thing I think China will be looking at is how stable the Taliban regime is and how much it's actually able to control the country. Because Chinese companies are happy to take risks and investment in risky places, but there's still a limit to how much risk they'll take. They will pull out if it's seen as too risky, or they won't go ahead.
Yeah, if they're comfortable with the risk, you'll know, because Hunter Biden will be set up in Kabul.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
So let me ask you this. Boris Johnson, Emmanuel Macron telling Biden, extend the deadline. Don't abide the August 31st deadline. We need more time to get our people out. You need more time to get their people out. Biden rebuffed that call from the G7 allies. How is that received? What is especially Boris Johnson thinking about America in this moment?
Well, you can see lots of his party, the Conservative Party, lots of the reactions from that were quite brutal in terms of kind of saying, right, the special relationship must be over. What's going on here? I guess it's kind of definitely all the rhetoric you saw over the last few years in terms of kind of Trump breaking up the Western alliance, or however you wish to frame it. It's kind of seen largely as a continuation of that trend of America's inward turn in the world, which is obviously your choice to make. But obviously, for many politicians in this country, it's seen as one of the major kind of milestones in the road towards America becoming more inward looking.
Going back to Dan Henninger's piece in the Journal, he writes, without the world able to see a strategic American lodestar for guidance, dangerous confusion spreads everywhere among allies and adversaries. Do you agree with that? Is that what's happening?
Well, I think the framing in terms of the U.S. as a strategic lodestar would, I think, perhaps be a bit out of date. I think the whole premise of the Western alliance, NATO, liberal kind of order, whatever you want to call it, has kind of been in a confusion anyway since the end of the Cold War. It's had no real kind of clear defined purpose. It's lots of the alliances and the groupings are kind of left over from the old theater of the Cold War. And so you're going to see these major shifts. And over the last few decades, you've seen the start of it. And you're going to see more of it as we kind of reorientate the world towards what is a new poles of power and different kind of actors realizing what their interests are and who their close relations will be with.
Going back to China, are you surprised there hasn't been more public discussion about the China-Pakistan axis, as it's called by some, on this measure and on this situation in Afghanistan, given that Pakistan is, you know, a nuclear power and an on-again, off-again ally of the United States, at least in terms of foreign aid, while they're harboring the Taliban throughout the duration of this fight?
Well, yeah, it's quite strange in terms of this kind of Chinese interest in Afghanistan seems to have kind of been seen as kind of coming out of nowhere, that as soon as Biden announced withdrawal, then China kind of comes circling, where China has had a long relationship in the region, both with Pakistan, very good allies since the 60s, and then has had an interest in Afghanistan since the 80s and has been deeply involved in Afghan politics on and off again since the 80s in terms of funding the Mujahideen to almost recognizing the first Taliban regime in the late 90s, early 2000s before 9/11. And then it keeping its line of communications open with the Taliban kind of very quietly throughout the kind of years of U.S. engagement in Afghanistan. And China is kind of left out of the story of kind of Pakistan's involvement with the Taliban and Afghan politics. But it can't really be kind of cut out and forgotten.
He is Tom Bailey, weekly columnist for Spiked Online, former staff writer at World Finance, The New Economy, and European CEO. Tom, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy using the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
Dan and Amy, all right, so here's what Secretary of State Tony Blinken said yesterday about the status of things, some numbers on evacuations and those yet to be evacuated.
Over the past 24 hours, we've been in direct contact with approximately 500 additional Americans and provided specific instructions on how to get to the airport safely. We'll update you regularly on our progress in getting these 500 American citizens out of Afghanistan. For the remaining roughly 1,000 contacts that we had who may be Americans seeking to leave Afghanistan, we're aggressively reaching out to them multiple times a day through multiple channels of communication, phone, email, text messaging, to determine whether they still want to leave and to get the most up-to-date information and instructions to them for how to do so. Some may no longer be in the country. Some may have claimed to be Americans, but turn out not to be. Some may choose to stay. We'll continue to try to identify the status and plans of these people in the coming days.
Yeah, for those who want to come home, that qualifier that the administration rinses and repeats religiously, and there's purpose to that. They don't select those phrases willy-nilly, or it's not just a coincidence that everybody is using the same phrase.
Yeah, I want to stay because I like my new granite tops in the kitchen. I mean, come on.
But also, the numbers continue to be all over the board. Marco Rubio tweeted out, the State Department admitted 4,100 Americans remaining in Kabul alone, but claimed that some of them are deciding to leave. And there's also a report, too, that there have been no Americans evacuated from anywhere else in the country other than Kabul. And
well,
so,
there's other Americans in parts of Afghanistan that have to make the dangerous trip on their own to get to the airport.
Well,
they want to leave.
So, I mean, the distribution of Americans. So there's how many and you know, what you know, self-reporting the embassy and contacts through these communication channels, what you know and what you're doing about it. Give us an order of magnitude. Give us the distribution. Give us the plan. You're still, it still seems to me that they're, you know, flying by the seat of their pants on this 10 days in.
It's news, opinion, insight. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. If you're looking for the latest news, insight into what it means, and the sharpest opinion, there's only one station in Chicago where you can turn, and it's this one. We're AM 560, The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. So, as we talked about, you heard Mike Scott reporting, the message again from State Department is don't go to the airport. So the only way you can get evacuated is by going to the airport in Kabul. but don't go to the airport because the security situation is deteriorating.
It's too dangerous and there might be a terrorist attack.
And we're out of there in 5 days. Huh?
You think there's some mixed signals going on in the Biden administration right now?
And there's been a lot of criticism, especially from the administration and its surrogates, Nancy Pelosi, of these two congressmen, Seth Moulton, Democrat from Massachusetts, Peter Meyer, Republican from Michigan, who secretly went to Cabo with without State Department authorization. The State Department didn't know about it, as John Kirby explains very carefully. State Department spokesman, or Pentagon spokesman.
We were not aware of this visit, and we are obviously not encouraging VIP visits to a very tense, dangerous, and dynamic situation at that airport and inside Kabul generally. And the secretary, I think, would have appreciated the opportunity to have had a conversation before the visit took place.
Yeah, I'm sure he would have. Well, they come back and now they say not only evacuating Americans who want to leave, you know, the phrase that you hear from every administration flack, which is very curious.
Yeah, because when they leave them behind, they'll say their cover will be, well, they wanted to stay. Mm. Yeah, but yeah. We'll need proof of that.
We'll see how that plays out. But I'm sure they would have wanted to talk to Moulton and Meyer before they made the trip, dissuade them from taking the trip. But they come back and they say, not only will we not be done by August 31st, we wouldn't be done by 9/11. So, I mean, is there a scenario under which this works out well for Americans? And right now, you know, significantly, mainly concerned about just American citizens and Afghan allies in that order being pulled out of there and brought back to a place of safety. For more on this and that question, is there a scenario right now where this works out well for those who are trying to get out? Pleased to be joined by Jason Kilmeyer, counterterrorism and foreign policy expert specializing in emerging technology applications. Former Chief of Staff of Global Defense, Security, and Justice at Deloitte Consulting. Jason, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
So right now, based on everything we know, and this changes, you know, moment to moment, as does the administration's position on what they're doing, is there a scenario you see where this works out well for the Americans that are, you know, dare I say, stranded in Kabul and Afghanistan generally?
I don't think so, guys. You talk about that verb stranded. The administration spent a lot of time fighting against that. And then they touted the numbers and tried to point everybody to the overall evacuation numbers. And then there was this sort of coordinated overreaction to the Moulton and Meyer visit, right? So that we see this attempt to shape the headlines and shape the perception from the administration. The numbers that matter, one of them is about people and one of them is about time. There are about 1,500 Americans the State Department thinks are left in Afghanistan. They only know where about 500 of those are. So best case scenario is the 500 we know about that have an opportunity to somehow get through the gauntlet that is the airport, or in some cases we go and find them in helos and bring them back. I mentioned the other one was about time. The 31st is the deadline, but the retrograde process for our military has already begun. And so the evacuation efforts themselves have to wrap up in the next 48 to 72 hours. So extremely tight timeline, extremely low chances of success, defining down what success means, again, with your point about the phrase, who wants to leave, all set in a city of 4.5 million people in with one airport and a single runway.
And Secretary Blinken, I mean, the Biden administration is sending mixed signals because Biden says, yes, we have to be out by August 31st. But Secretary Blinken said, we're going to stay there past that due date. So who's in charge? Who's telling the truth?
I think we're going to be gone. And if there's any capacity in which we would remain, it would probably be, a few consular officers maybe operating out of the airport. And when they hinted those post 31 contingency plans, here's what I think that really boils down to. We're gone, and maybe there's a few, you know, sort of evacuations to third party countries where we helicopter in or send one plane into the airport without, you know, an actual presence there. But what it really means when we talk about that post August 31st, it's going to be about us essentially bribing the Taliban to let our folks out. What other tools do we have at our disposal other than promises of aid and promises of assistance? We have evacuated Bagram. We have limited our presence such that we have no regional basing agreements secured in any of the northern neighbors of Afghanistan. So I think that any presence is really going to be on the consular side in trying to negotiate the safe passage of Americans on a single file or sort of case-by-case basis, which is a stunning thing to think about.
It is stunning. And who's to say that bribing them will work, even if it comes down to that? If I was on the Chinese Communist Politburo, I'd say, if that's what America tries to do, then we'll bribe the Taliban with more money to keep them there, to keep this, destabilizing for America event continuing. Well, you know, why not? Why not force the Americans to have to escalate if they want their people back?
Yeah, I think what will happen is the Taliban has an incentive to cooperate in this particular instance, and only for this reason: why interrupt your enemy as they're leaving? Right. So I think the Taliban's incentive is a cold incentive that says don't interrupt your enemy in their retreat, which is what we're doing. We're retreating. But you make a good point here, an underappreciated point about China. What is China's main export model around the world other than goods, cheap goods? Is it's to dictatorships. They offer short-term stability. And so the financial lifeline that China and Russia and Pakistan could provide the Taliban is the very thing that will insulate them from future Western pressure.
And with respect to the Taliban, even if they didn't, and hopefully, obviously, this doesn't happen, go so far as to start executing Americans. Why not hold Americans longer, make this a news story, and further humiliate this country?
Yeah, I think that short term, that's the calculation they have to make, which is, do they kind of advertise themselves as the hostile nation that they are this soon? Or do they make nice and see if they can secure funding? Let me give you an example. The German envoy to Afghanistan, and obviously that's someone working very hard in very dire circumstances, has said, hey, the Taliban has agreed that we'll be able to get some people out after August 31st. And guess what was the very next announcement? And the German government pledges aid to the Taliban, contingent on, et cetera, et cetera. So I think the Taliban's ready to take that money. They've got salaries to pay. They've got to do that. The question then long term is, one, even if they said protect all the Americans, one, will the frontline troops who have been indoctrinated the way that they have obey those orders in a far off province somewhere? Maybe not. And then two is, you know, if they can't even control the ISIS threat within their country, then we're already seeing an example of the very thing that justified us going in the first place, which is the terrorist threat emanating from Afghanistan.
Do you think that this is going to end, you know, peacefully or without a terrorist attack of some sort?
It's hard to predict. I hope so. And what I don't like is that I'm just reduced to hoping, right? Can all the Americans get safely through that gauntlet? Can they get through Taliban checkpoints? It's incredible to think that that's what we're dependent on. Can, with a fluid security situation on the ground, you know, if there is an attack, can it happen not in the next 72 hours? We're reduced to hoping that right now. And I think that's an important thing for the listeners. This is the most tenuous time right now, not last week, not the week previous. As this comes to sort of a screeching halt and screeching of wheels pulling up off the runway, everybody in Afghanistan that wants to leave is going to get more desperate. The terrorists are going to get more motivated to attack. And then the question is, how does that terrorist threat reconstitute itself over the next few years?
Right. And you have still no real handle on how many Americans are there. There's never been disclosure on the number of Americans who self-reported to the embassy. So we know who they are. We know how many they are. We have some idea where they are. The additional ones, I mean, Blinken gave numbers yesterday. I know You just repeated them. But Marco Rubio said, the State Department said there are 4,100 Americans, some who want to stay. I'd love to hear the stories about people who want to stay. Can you just give me one story of why somebody wants to stay other than because they're not going to leave without taking other people with them? That's not somebody wants to stay. That's somebody wants to go with others. I just don't buy any of this.
Yeah, and I think you made a good point yesterday, right? So there was this number of 4,100 that was mentioned, and then it was pulled back less than an hour later. And earlier we had heard numbers as high as, 10,000 or even much higher numbers. And then it got down to 500 we know of, maybe 1,000 others. When it's that big of a divergence, what you know is they have no clue.
Right.
And so very rarely does any administration get this caught this flat-footed, that we see the sausage being made in this kind of painful and granular detail. And what that tells you is this is what government not functioning well looks like, right? They're behind the talking points. They're contradicting themselves. DOD says one thing, state says another, Blinken says a third, even though he's ostensibly the head of the State Department. So when we see this happen, that's when we know we've got sort of a reactive Nixonian level of denial, kind of matched with the incompetence of Carter.
That's a pretty good summation. Jason Kilmeyer, counterterrorism and foreign policy expert specializing in emergency technology applications, former chief of staff of Global Defense Security and Justice at Deloitte Consulting. Jason, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks for the company, guys.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Hear about the big stories of the day, then talk about them right here on Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer.
It's time for Animal Stories with Uncle Dan and Little Amy.
You know, Amy, when I read this story in People Magazine, I saw the headline. I thought...
What?
Well, I thought that maybe Ron Perlman was cheating on his wife, the Sons of Anarchy guy. Have you ever seen that guy? The guy starring the Sons of Anarchy?
Yes. I've watched it once, yes, but I've seen him.
The
yes.
reason I thought it was is because the story is a Belgian woman has a 4-year affair with chimpanzee. Doesn't Ron Perlman look like an ape? Absolutely he does. But anyway, it's not. Apparently, she was having an affair with the chimpanzee at the zoo in Belgium.
Okay. Did they have conjugal visits?
Addie Timmermans is her name. She's been banned into contact with a chimpanzee named Cheetah that arrived at the Antwerp Zoo 30 years ago. I love that animal and he loves me. I haven't got anything else. Why do they want to take that away? We were having an affair, I'll just say.
An affair of the heart, yeah.
Well, in the immortal words of philosopher and former United States Senator Mark Kirk, love is all about who you love and who loves you back.
Okay.
So I don't think it's right that she's banned.
Oh, really?
That's Ron Perlman in Sons of Anarchy.
Well, our own Justin Kosick came into work the other day, and I noticed something on his arm. I thought it was a little trick you get in a Cracker Jack box, how you put on tattoos on your arm.
The temp tattoo.
Yeah. It's not a temp tattoo. Justin, tell us what you got a tattoo of and why.
I got a tattoo of my cat's paw who passed away earlier this year. Got it, as a little memento with my sister, because we had the cat for 19 years.
That is a long time, but...
You're already getting married. You don't need to try to be this guy, this chick magnet guy. You're done. Stop.
And his
cat with the cat tattoos.
Name is Neutron, or was Neutron. And his nickname was what?
Mr.
Neutron.
Freckles.
No, what was his nickname?
Nudie.
Nudie. Yeah. So rest in peace, Nudie.
Now he's got Sons of Anarchy quality ink, sort of. If he wants to join a tricycle gang.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. This is Chicago's Morning Answer. Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. This is Chicago's Morning Answer with Dan Proft and Amy Jacobson on AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy. A new study from the Oxford University Clinical Research Group. These are tropical disease experts authored this study. Published in The Lancet, which used to be a respectable medical journal. finds that fully vaccinated people carry 251 times the viral load of coronavirus as compared to those who have not received one of the vaccines. Viral loads of breakthrough Delta variant infection cases were 251 times higher than those of cases infected with old strains detected between March and April of 2020, according to the study. That's quoting the study. Vaccines seem to allow vaccinated individuals to carry unusually high viral loads without becoming sick, but transforming them into potential super spreaders who experience symptoms later on. The study focused on healthcare workers who are unable to leave a hospital for 2 weeks. The study showed that fully vaccinated workers about 2 months after injection carried and transmitted the virus to their vaccinated colleagues after infection. They also passed the virus to unvaccinated people, including their patients. This was the vaccine used in the study was the Oxford AstraZeneca vaccine. Well, that's interesting. Wait, could it be that the vaccinated are super spreaders and they're the ones driving up the cases? How much of a quinky dink would that be? For more on this and more, we're pleased to be joined by somebody who can distill this for us, Dr. Marty Makary. He's a professor at the Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and Bloomberg School of Public Health, chief medical advisor to Sesame Care, author of the award-winning book, The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. Dr. Makary, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Good to be with you guys.
So what about this Oxford study?
I didn't get a good look at it, but we've known for a while that those who have vaccinated immunity still build up the virus in their nose and they're still contagious. It's probably 10 to 20% of the spread is among those vaccinated. People forget that. Our goal was to prevent people from getting severely ill and dying from COVID. And that's what vaccines do. They give you systemic immunity, that is in your blood system. The immunity is not right at the level of your nose and mucous membrane. And by the way, natural immunity is more at the level of the mucous membrane, so sometimes that's more effective. But you can build up the virus in your nose while your body's still fending it off and protecting yourself.
Yeah, I agree that that we've known this for a while, but I think you'd be hard-pressed to get an understanding of that from a majority of Americans because of the rhetoric from lockdown politicians like the governor that we have here. And the, I mean, would you agree, just as a layman, like we all are, just observationally, the perception about these vaccines is it's like a force field around you, which is why you have all these this zeitgeist for vaccine mandates.
Yeah, people have come to think that a vaccine gives you like a it's like a bug zapper, and like nothing can through your force field. And that's not the case. And that's why people are freaking out over these very mild breakthrough infections. They thought they had a force field. And our battle has never been against the sniffles and mild symptoms. It's been against severe illness. And on that front, we're winning.
Well, I wanted to ask you about, do masks reduce COVID transmission in children? Because our governor has come in and has a mask mandate for schools. And this morning he's announcing a mask mandate for the entire state of Illinois if you're indoors.
So I would say that if it does, it depends on the quality of the mask. We don't have good research. The cloth mask probably has a minimal or negligible impact and maybe some downsides for the subset of kids who struggle, like kids with disabilities. What makes me so frustrated is to see this massive war around these thin, barely effective cloth masks in kids that have a minimal effect, if any. And meanwhile, we've got 1,000 Americans dying a day. These are non-immune adults. This is where we should be spending all of our energy, not fighting over a cloth mask in a kid. By the way, Europe does not require a cloth mask or any mask for kids in school. It's optional. They can. But I think we're going to look back in January. We're going to see 90% of kids in America have gotten COVID, and almost nothing will have prevented it.
Yeah, well, that really runs afoul of the zero tolerance COVID folks. That we're going to zero COVID. We're going to eliminate this virus. We're going to beat the virus, Dr. Makary. That's what we're going to do. It's all of this hyper-politicized rhetoric, and then to question them is to politicize it while they're trying to save lives, which is what we experienced yesterday and what Amy did specifically with the governor talking about mask mandates. If you want kids to not have to wear masks in school, goes the line of argumentation, then just shut up about them wearing masks in school and someday they won't have to wear masks in school. This is what we're treated with.
Well, if you look at the schools that have high case numbers upon opening,
yes.
Palm Beach County Schools, Broward County, 400 kids tested positive on day one of school. They didn't get that infection from the school, okay? They got it from adults, probably from a household setting. The school is probably a safer setting. So when you see such high numbers of positives on the opening day of school, that tells you that masks or no masks has nothing to do with it.
Nothing to do with it.
And weren't they mostly asymptomatic? Like they're healthy kids otherwise, and we're testing healthy kids, and they may have COVID.
That's exactly right. We're barely testing the asymptomatic kid population. That is, you know, we might have right now in America, half of all American children have had COVID. Most have no idea, right? Up to, say, 75 or more percent have no symptoms. So how would they even know to get tested? They don't. I mean, my nephew's tested positive. He's felt fine the entire 6 days he's been sitting at home. The tests keep showing up positive. That's probably a lot more kids out there than are getting tested. If you think about half of the nation's kids, let's put that number around 26 million American kids. Okay, we've got, you know, some deaths, maybe, who knows, a dozen over the, you know, the last month or so in kids. Out of 26 million kids getting a virus, that's an extremely low case fatality. I'm not marginalizing it, but it's equal or less to the case fatality rate of RSV and influenza and other viruses, but this is becoming a highly stigmatized virus, like HIV, where it's like, oh my God, there's one case in the school. Well, guess what? Are you going to act like this for influenza? Are we going to contact trace for flu? I mean, go ahead, but let's be consistent.
Yeah, right. And let's, you want to play the anecdote game too? I mean, not you, but the way that's being reported. I'm going to disclose the plural of anecdote is not data, but that's not the way it's treated. Every case of a kid who gets infected with COVID is treated just as you're describing. And yet BBC presenter Lisa Shaw, 44 years old, died due to complications from AstraZeneca COVID vaccine just over 3 weeks after the first dose, according to a coroner's report. Another reporter named Denham Hitchcock from 7 News in Australia rushed to hospital, extremely rare inflammation of the heart after getting Pfizer COVID-19 shot. These are anecdotes. That doesn't say anything about the general safety or make an assessment, a sensible assessment of risk associated with getting vaccinated. But the way I just reported these two instances of vaccinated people is the way they report every COVID infection of a kid.
And you've got Simeon Scott, who in Chicago, the surgeons there tried to do an emergency heart transplant after she got her second dose of the vaccine.
Right.
Unsuccessful. She died. Jacob Kleinick, we still don't have answers from the CDC about that sudden death. When a kid suddenly gets sick after the second dose of the vaccine, to me, that means that the dose is too high. One dose is the right dose for kids based on the data that I have right now, in my own professional opinion, if the kid doesn't already have immunity. So I'm not anti-vax, but this two-dose regimen total rigidity is where we're getting into trouble with these complications.
In Europe, if you've had COVID, you only are allowed one shot. And they're not vaccinating children because they're not the risk group that they thought that they were. They're not going to waste vaccines on them.
Well, they have very smart and practical doctors who are exercising real medical leadership over there. We've got an FDA and a Dr. Fauci who are so rigid that when it was clear that we could save more lives by delaying the second dose, I'm talking about for adults back in the spring.
First dose,
they
first.
Were absolutely, yeah. They were totally opposed to it. And guess what? It turns out that if you got that second dose 3 months after the first, your immunity is three times better and you would never need to even talk about a booster.
Well, and here's the thing, too. So what you just said about the one dose for kids, this is important, too, because what you're starting to see happen, it happened in Chicago, first high school DePaul College prep in Chicago yesterday said vaccine mandate. You got to be vaxxed to be in school. So now you're talking about kids that are 14 to 18 years old, and they got a vaccine mandate on them, just like is happening at colleges and workplaces and so on and so forth. You're going to see more of this, I'm almost certain. And so what you just said about the dosage, now it's getting real.
Well, Simeon Scott, who died, had gotten two doses of the vaccine because Northwestern University required it. She was a journalism major, you know, and so one dose was probably the appropriate dose. By the way, one dose in Israel conferred 100% efficacy in kids 12 through 15. What does that tell you? It never made sense that a heavy 50-year-old man gets the same dose as a thin 12-year-old girl to me.
Right.
The
exactly.
dose is probably too high.
And so just pulling back here, where, in your estimation, are we at with this vaunted Delta variant in terms of its threat?
It's real. It's ripping through the non-immune population really fast. And our battle should be entirely focused on non-immune adults. That is, those who have not been vaccinated and don't have natural immunity, they need to get vaccinated, and they need to do it quickly, because this thing is ripping through the country and 1,000 Americans are dying. They're almost all non-immune, non-vaccinated adults.
I wanted to get your reaction to something else. This is Dr. Jay Bhattacharya from Stanford, who's a medical doctor and an economist. In an interview recently, he said, we've been vindicated. The lockdowns were the single biggest mistake in public health history. I don't see how anyone can look at lockdown and say that was successful policy. We had lockdowns in country after country after country. Would you call lockdown success in the UK? Would you call lockdown in Peru a success? The lockdown in India, the United States? I don't think by any measure you could call them a success. Your reaction?
Well, they cost us a heavy price in terms of medical harm. You know, isolation is a medical condition. Look at the effects of profound isolation. Look at what's happening to substance abuse. Nobody seems to care that 80,000 Americans died in the last year from alcohol abuse. That there's sexual abuse of kids, that there's substance abuse. These are real problems. And when you move the country into total isolation, you find out pretty quickly you can't live in the International Space Station by yourself for 2 years. Your mind goes nuts. The physiology has its physiologic reserves altered and reduced. And so we've created a lot of health problems as a result.
I mean, drinking's up 323%.
And that's
for moms that were staying home with their kids all day, who had to quit their jobs, not only quit their jobs, and some were stay-at-home moms, but now had to homeschool two kids at the same time. They started boozing at 10 a.m.
And think about their husbands having to come home to drunk wives and the kids.
Exactly.
Terrible. Dr. Marty Makary, he is professor of Johns Hopkins at Johns Hopkins School of Medicine and Bloomberg School of Public Health, chief medical advisor to Sesame Care, and author of the award-winning The Price We Pay, What Broke American Healthcare and How to Fix It. Dr. Makary, thanks as always for your insights. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Dan and Amy.
Thank you. And he joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Listen to podcast of Dan and Amy from the AM560 mobile app. Download it today at 560theanswer.com/mobile.
So rumor going around that in addition to indoor mask mandates statewide today, in addition to mandating state workers get vaccinated, that Governor Spaulding is considering imposing vaccine mandates on restaurants. In other words, you must be vaccinated to eat at a restaurant.
Yeah, it's just like New York. You have to show that you've been vaccinated in order to get a seat at the table and eat a meal. And that'll morph into gyms then, and movie theaters, and concerts, and welcome to your new life, Illinois.
It's another version of, what this really is like a real-world Stanford prison experiment. That's what's happening here.
Before you see it on TV, share it on Facebook, or read about it in the paper, hear it here first. This is Chicago's Morning Answer on AM 560. The Answer. Only the biggest stories, only the biggest guests, and only the biggest opinions. This is AM 560. The Answer.
Top of the morning, Dan and Amy and... we could use a man like Calvin Coolidge again, sort of paraphrasing the All in the Family theme music. Of course, Norman Lear was Herbert Hoover. I go with Silent Cal. Joining us now is Amity Schley. She's the board chair of the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation. And Charles Love, our friend Charles Love, executive director of Seeking Educational Excellence. Amity, Charles, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it.
Thrilled to be here.
Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
I want to get to the citizenship challenge that the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation is doing. But before we begin, Amity, I was, and Charles, either one, both, I just mentioned this sort of in passing before our news, that with respect to COVID, it seems like we are all unwittingly participating in something akin to the Stanford Prison Experiment. And for those of you who don't know, this is 50 years ago. The experiment randomly assigned a group of young, mostly middle income, stable white men the role of guard or the role of prisoner. And though there's much controversy surrounding it in terms of medical ethics and so forth, the upshot is when people were given power, just artificially conferred power, and meaning the guards, the abuse of the prisoners began in short order. And I just feel like with respect to the COVID lockdown politicians and so many who are essentially buttressing what they're doing because of fear or ignorance or the combination of the two, that we have a control and experimental group in America right now writ large.
Ooh, can I take that one?
That's a really funny thing to say. So who are the guards? I would say the healthcare establishment. And it is not relinquishing power easily.
Yeah, but I would also say that it's a little bit worse because in that experiment, both the guards and the prisoners were made to stay in that, you know, in that ethos the whole time. So they were kind of living that experience so they feel what it's like. And here, we don't have the people who are in control living anywhere that would force them to kind of consume to the norms of that situation because they're not following any of the things that they want to do. In fact, they're doing the total opposite openly, and no one seems to care.
Well, that's right. But, I mean, that's with the prison guards. We're in charge. We can act capriciously. And that's what we have here. We're in charge, and we can act capriciously. I mean, in Illinois, we literally have one-man rule. And I mean man, not one person following the law and the General Assembly going along. I mean, Pritzker is just issuing emergency orders and mandates on and off and back and forth. And that's just how it is, because if you say I'm doing something to save lives, then you can do anything in certain parts of America these days.
Well, it's interesting when you play to the heart, save lives, that gives you a bigger license, right?
Right.
And, you know, if you say save every life, no one will question you. Then they'll sound inhumane, right? But life is about trade-off. And there's that somehow, you know, we have emoto logic going on.
Well, yeah. I mean, he signed an emergency order, and then we had Lollapalooza the next day. How ridiculous is that, where we had people from all over the country and all over the world come in for a music festival?
Well, hey, it didn't turn out to be a super spreader.
Right. Or so they say. That's what they're telling us. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but
yeah, they can pick which ones are.
Yeah, but the point is, right, Lollapalooza, vax pass or negative COVID tests. Tonight, Soldier Field, Kanye West, no vaccine, no COVID, no negative COVID test required, no mask required, even as he's imposing a statewide indoor mask mandate, kids in school mask mandate. Now you've had high schools in Chicago imposing a vaccine mandate in addition to colleges, in addition to companies. So, you know, it's rules for some and not for others.
Yep.
All right. Well, let's.
Yeah, well,
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Charles.
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
Well, I wanted to switch gears and talk about schools a little bit, but in the context of the educational component of schools, not the formatics, if you will. And so with respect to what's happening, you see the fights going on across the country over the attempt to rewrite American history, 1619 Project, critical race theory. I can't say this enough because it's so stunning. Literally, you have a grade school in Atlanta that was apparently black students with black teachers and white students with white teachers at grade school, literally segregating by race in a middle school in Atlanta until a black mom sued the school, and maybe they're still doing it with the case pending. I don't know, but that was the story. So that's where K through 12 education is now. And I am suspecting that your Calvin Coolidge Foundation citizenship challenge is in part at least an attempt to provide an antidote to some of this intellectual fraud that's going on.
I think Charles should speak to that.
Well, you know, I say, in a sense, you know, I've talked to you several times. You know, that's my goal. And I think that this is getting way out of control. And at some point, people need to wake up to it. But we, Emily and I were just thinking that people don't know anything. And that's probably the bigger problem. These people are out there. We watched last year, as we all talk about, people protesting and saying that things are unfair. And we constantly hear the refrain of systemic racism. But when you ask people what it is, no one can tell. They'll just say, you know, disparate outcomes. Or we all know that in 1864, right? But if you ask them, so what do you want to change and how do you want to change it? They have no idea, because they don't know how, you know, a bill becomes a law. They don't know who that congressman is. They don't know what's going on the local level. So they're only paying attention to, you know, clickbait and headlines. So we think that and the other problem, of course, is the more that this stuff happens in school, as bad as it is, there's another negative to it, in that it's crowding out this type of thing. You know, you're learning less and less civics, but how can you even have time in the school day to learn it if you're spending the school day focusing so heavily on slavery and the ills of America and never talking about any of the positives? So we just think that if they're not going to do it in school, we need to give people the foundation. And if we get the kids engaged in it, then maybe, you know, their parents will see it and they'll demand more.
And so I'll just use this as a jumping off point, Amity. And so you guys have put together the foundation, a study guide that has 108 questions and answers the history that Charles Love was just speaking to.
Absolutely. Well, you know, every new citizen has to take the naturalization test, and we've let kids in America down by not teaching them the material that every new citizen knows, such as a senator serves 6 years, a congressman serves 2. I always have trouble with that, but there it is. And so this is an answer fact-based test, like a quiz. It's not Jeopardy format, but it's a fun quiz. And if you prepare the 108 questions right on our website, coolidgefoundation.org, citizenship, let's see, I won't say the whole URL, but I think you guys will post it, coolidgefoundation.org, debate Coolidge Citizenship Challenge, then the kids will be tested by a kind, interested grown-up on Zoom, and if they do well, they get to go to Washington with their mom or another guardian in November to compete in the final round at Coolidge House. So the key dates are September 17 to 24, the prelim rounds, can you answer basic civics questions? And then the final round, November 11 to 13. And if you know a little kid who can memorize stuff fast, this is not hard. It's only 108 questions. The answers are very simple. We have a Quizlet flashcard set up, and you can also email us, and we'll mail you paper flashcards, very handsome, with the Coolidge logo on them, because Calvin Coolidge himself took a look at the Constitution when he was 13 years old and a little boy in a very remote town. He didn't understand it all. No one does the first time, but at least he learned the facts. And, you know, whatever your politics are when you grow up, if you know the facts, you do better as a citizen, and you can improve the country better if you at least know the facts. Right now, what we're getting is young politicians who don't even know the facts.
And this is for grades like 5th through 10th, or what grades?
Well, we're focusing on 7th, 8th, but if you're younger, you know, we'll let you do it, and 9th, 10th, like that.
Okay.
Once you get to 11th grade, more discouraging, particularly for kids in challenged areas. One of the hosts of this event is Judge Janice Rogers Brown, our Coolidge trustee, a federal judge, one of the first African-American federal judges. You know, there are not that many. And she is, learned the Constitution herself. It shaped her, and she's devoted to this project. So when the kids come to Washington, they're going to meet important people, and that's key, too. Know the facts, meet some grown-ups, plan your future. And Charles and I both believe that 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th grade is not too early, that one of the great errors that parents are now discovering is we've kind of overlooked what happens in middle and high school. Well, middle and high school is where people set their sights and let them be a little higher.
Well, the other thing it seems to me that's happened too is in almost going unnoticed by so many, maybe a little bit more noticed in the era of COVID, but we moved away from teaching kids, which is what this contest aims to do, to engaging with kids as education, engaging with them, not teaching them. We engage with them almost like at a peer level identity. And this
yeah,
is where all,
Dan, now you're talking my language.
And this is where all the activism comes in.
Well, it's very boring to sit there and engage from the kids' point of view too. A lot of kids have a competitive nature and they don't want to get therapy in the class and learn something slowly and feel clever. That's gratifying to the teacher. They want to prove they're good and maybe mutiny, right? And school deprives competitive kids of competition in the classroom because guess what? People lose and sometimes people cry, right, if they lose. Okay, well, that's life. And that's why we made a contest and not a seminar, right, Charles?
Right, right. And you make a good point, Dan. I think the other problem is when you talk about engaging, you know, I see it with my son, and he's young, and I've already, you know, had a couple meetings with the principal. They don't like me. But they do this thing. It was right from the beginning, it was all first names and, hi, I'm Katie. And, you know, so they take away that barrier of adult to child, teacher to student right at the bat. They're all friends. You know, it's like, okay, friends, let's do this. So when they don't want to do it, they're shocked. They're like, well, we asked them to do it. They didn't feel like it. I said, because you basically created an environment where they get to say what they want to do. So you're the one who has the knowledge. You're supposed to be teaching them this and guiding them along. And you're just like, oh, we're all in this together. We're all buddies. You know, that's not beneficial to young kids.
All right. Yes, sir. Mr. Love.
And
Ms. Schlaes.
Yeah. And yeah, I love that.
I don't get cross here.
The first 50 students to register get a $50 gift card, Dan. So maybe you can, you know, fib your age a little bit.
Yeah.
Register.
Yeah. Okay. You got somebody that could. One of your sons,
the younger one,
Eli, could qualify for this.
Could.
All right. There you go. And then mom could take a trip to Washington, D.C. if it's still open by November.
I want to meet Amy.
Yes.
That's the
everybody
thing.
Does.
I want to meet Amy.
She's a celebrity here. She's the bad girl of Chicago journalism, too. She's got cross with the governor, so she may not be allowed to travel. There may be a she may be put on a no-fly list here.
Yeah,
so we'll
they'll yank my
see.
Passport. We'll see.
All right, so it's the Calvin Coolidge Citizenship Challenge. It's a contest, not a seminar, not engaging. We're teaching and testing. And again, CoolidgeFoundation.org. CoolidgeFoundation.org is where you go to fill out the questionnaire. And begin the process to get to the preliminary rounds September 17th to the 24th. And then maybe if your son or daughter does well, go all the way to D.C. come November. Amity Schlaes, board chair of the Calvin Coolidge Presidential Foundation. Charles Love, executive director of Seeking Educational Excellence. Thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate talking to both.
Thank you.
Thank you. And they both joined us on our turnkey.pro answer line.
Connect with Dan and Amy on the AM 560 The Answer mobile app. Just text the word app to 64636 to download the app today.
Thanks for listening to Chicago's Morning Answer podcast, sponsored by Signature Bank. Signature Bank takes pride in helping customers grow their business and provide unmatched banking expertise, custom financial solutions, and the industry's best technology. So whether you're a business looking for a deposit relationship or needs a ready source of financing, Signature Bank is the right bank for you. Call today at 773-467-5600 to hear how Signature Bank can help your business grow and thrive. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.